Danny boy, the pipes are calling from glen to glen and down the mountainside.
And it's KBC Arts Now on KBCR, arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. On this edition of the program, we'll hear from Michael Londra, a host of Ireland with Michael, seen on KVCR-TV Monday evenings at 6:30. Michael also has a performance August 8th at the Redlands Bowl. Now, Michael, I heard Wexford, your hometown, described as located in, to quote, Ireland's sunny southeast. And I really didn't know if they were being a bit tongue-in-cheek in saying, well, Ireland and sunny in the same sentence.
Yeah, no, it is. It's where Irish people go on vacation. It's warmer. We get more sun hours because of the Gulf Stream there, which comes right around the harbor in Wexford. We have our own little microclimate. It's lovely. I mean, it's all relative. I'm talking to a Californian. So,
yeah, true.
You know,
true.
I'm sure you'll be freezing when you get there.
We get cold when it gets down into the lower 80s Fahrenheit. Well, talk to me about Wexford, please, then, getting away from the weather in a musical sense. Is it known as Ireland's opera capital?
Yeah, it's for sure Ireland's opera kind of singing capital. But Wexford and Wexford Festival Opera would be one of the top rare opera festivals in the world. It's in the top five, I think. I don't think that's a stretch. It's a small wee town, about 22,000 people. But for 3 months of the year, some of the biggest opera stars in the world come into town. The National Opera House is right in the center of the town, a beautiful theater. And it becomes this hub of kind of international culture for about 3 months of the year in the fall, in October. So my earliest memory is kind of walking through this town with tiny little streets and amazing singers, songs coming out of the rehearsal spaces all around town.
Oh, wonderful.
And seeing all of these exotic people from all over the world come and sing. I had no idea what opera was then, but it grew on me. I sang in my first opera there when I was 11.
Oh, my goodness.
Before I knew what opera was, Giovanna d'Arco, I sang.
Let's just dive into the deep end with Verdi.
Yeah. Now, the only thing is, you know, so half of my life would be based in traditional music, in Irish folk music, and the other half, as a young man, as a teenager and in my 20s, was learning to sing classically and getting in trouble in both scenes for not committing 100% to either.
Purists in any fashion, in any genre, they'll just frown on anything else, it seems. I read that you were indeed immersed in music at an early age. So is this a case of you being a child asking for music lessons or, you know, as often the case, piano lessons thrust upon you at the age of 4 or 5 or so?
I mean, no, not really. So there's a culture in Ireland, you know, and particularly in Wexford because it's so musical, but it's just part of your life to be involved in the arts in some way. So,
nice.
I mean, yes, you know, my mother had 11 brothers and sisters. They all sang. My earliest memory is me singing in the parlor for my grandmother. There was no choice but to be a singer. And with that comes an interest in traditional music. And in the traditional arts aren't learned formally. You know, there's no sheet music for jigs and reels or for old Irish airs. But the other half of my life was then being part of children's choirs and singing as a boy soprano. So I did Handel's Messiah when I was 11.
Mm.
And before I was 15, I had done about 8 operas. And that is just very much part of the singing culture that is the town of Wexford.
How wonderful.
Yeah, it's wonderful until you want to just be a kid and just go out and kick a football. But then you realize that you've got rehearsals or you have to sing in church all through Christmas, you know. I have great memories of it.
And now, jumping forward many years, I was producing a Celtic music show in Kentucky in the mid-90s. And so I became aware of Riverdance close to when it began. And so you were a featured singer with the original Riverdance on Broadway. Did that include members of the troupe from the original cast just a few years earlier, or was the Broadway iteration completely new?
It was a combination. So what happened was the initial tour, I was asked to be a part of the show in the West End. So I went over, did a short spot in the West End, but I had already lived in New York and I was determined to get back. And that was my caveat was, you know, I'll take on this gig if I can get back to the U.S. And Luckily, Bill, the writer of Riverdance, liked how I sang. He heard me singing in a musical in Dublin, and I literally got a call out of the blue asking me to come to New York to initially tour with the show. That first tour, we did like 6 weeks in Radio City, and it was a lot of fun. But at that point, Bill was writing a new version of the show for Riverdance. And I was like the storyteller. He wrote original pieces for the show on Broadway. I got to do 18 months there in the Gershwin. It was the biggest thrill of my life. However, you know, I realized that I didn't want to be a Broadway performer all my life.
Yeah. Was that Bill Whalen that you were speaking of?
It was.
I used to enjoy putting his music on my show and other names that I encountered and loved putting on the air. I know that you had guest performances with De Dannon, also with Teda. How did those work out?
The first time that I worked with De Dannon, I grew up, you know, like when people were buying Pink Floyd, I was one of De Dannon. You know, they are my kind of greatest Irish band of all time, you know. Mm-hmm. So the first PBS TV special that I taped back in 2011, I had De Dannon on as my guest. Actually in California, in the California Theater there in San Bernardino, that great old hall there, we taped it there. And De Dannon flew in, and look, I'm very lucky. The good thing about being from Ireland and being involved in music is that everyone knows each other. So whenever you're doing anything, you can kind of strong-arm people into coming along. And luckily I was able to persuade Frankie Gavin and the rest of De Dannon to join me then. That was a big thrill for me.
I wish that I'd known about it as it was happening. The California Theater in San Bernardino, oh, if I think about it, it may be 9 city blocks from where I'm sitting at this very moment.
Are you kidding me? Oh, I've such warm feelings for that place. I know it's been through the mill, but I love that theater.
It's a beautiful, very historic place. And we aired that special, by the way, here at KVCR.
I remember KVCR. I remember being there. I came along to that.
Excellent.
That's a world away now.
Well, that's where we are now. We are not only a NPR radio station, but also a PBS TV station and more.
Right.
And so there's a big tie-in where it keeps on circling back around to KVCR in some fashion. So back to Riverdance, you actually got a call to come be a part of it, because I did grow up as a theater geek, and so I could see getting a call. I also wondered if, my God, like the big, big cattle call, you and 200 other people bring in your best Danny Boy.
Yeah, I did not have to do that. It's just as well, because I would be terrible in auditions. I produce shows now, so I see the other side of the desk, and I couldn't have done it. And I quickly realized when I was on Broadway that Broadway was not for me as a performer. I am a looser performer. I am terrible at following a script. I'm also a really bad actor. I just happen to sing well and in tune. So I learned very quickly that while I am obsessed with musical theater and Broadway, that I would not be a performer. And, you know, performing 8 shows a week is a big thrill, and especially in a fantastic theater like the Gershwin. But you need to be hugely disciplined, and I was a bit too much of a perfectionist. So I had no life for a year and a half.
Oh, gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, I can't imagine that's on your resume. I sing well, but forget it at acting. No, just no.
I don't lead with that usually. But, you know, I think like all Irish people, we've a healthy dose of skepticism about what we call notions in Ireland. God forbid you should feel good about yourself.
Let's look for a bit, please, at, I suppose this may be your latest or amongst your latest projects. This is a PBS travel and music show called Ireland with Michael. So you serve as host and producer on the show. You visit different towns and regions. It talks about showing off the country that you love the only way that you know how, and that is through music. The thing is, though, it's not just a musical celebration. You're exploring the countryside. You're looking at historic or even legendary places. I think it started from some sort of a tour, and then the show developed from that. If you could talk about how the show began and what laid the groundwork for this PBS series.
Let me just first of all say that when I started this, I had no idea what television was, how I could do this. But also, I didn't know where to start. And that doesn't seem to stop me. If I decide to do something, I'm just going to do it, whether it's bad or good.
Good. Nice.
I had a thought. So we were filming at the National Opera House to do a concert special that I had planned to take to PBS. And when we were there, I suggested to Mike Sulzberger, the director, who's a big NBC producer and a great, great friend of mine, He knew that I had no idea about television, but he knew nothing about Ireland or music. We just put our heads together and we figured it out. I kind of stepped out of the opera house and wanted people to get a glimpse of where I came from and what I loved about it, because people constantly ask me, where should I go? What should I see? And time again, I always want people to not only go there for the castles or the scenery, you know, but the real asset that Ireland has are its artists, its creators, its singers, dancers, storytellers. They're the people that give those memories that people take back to the U.S. So when we wanted to create a travel show and we were talking to PBS, I painted a picture and they said, look, go and see what you come up with. And we just started in my home county and worked our way outside. And 46 episodes later, we're still doing it. And it's turned into a big passion of mine. I work very closely now with the Irish government to kind of plan out what we want to highlight and who we want to highlight, because I find all of these great artists, you know, a lot of them are famous Irish artists. You know, we have indeed had Riverdance or Clannad or Peda have been on the show. The best reaction that I get, the most emails I get, are for these new artists that people have never heard of.
Excellent.
So it is a travel show. I do want people to see where to go, and because there's a story around every corner. Ireland is the same size as Indiana.
Oh my gosh.
It's incredible. It's packed with so many things and so many experiences. We could do another 20 seasons easily, and we probably will, because we have the best time. We just came back about 2 weeks ago from shooting season 6, and we just laughed our way around. It involves me trying things that I probably never would do. You know, they've had me in kayaks out on the Atlantic. They've had me taking seaweed baths. They've had me surfing, climbing mountains. Mm. And I just love an adventure. And we've worked with the same team since day one. And we just kind of go and laugh our way around Ireland.
That sounds just beautiful. Absolutely beautiful.
It really is. It's a dream job. I remember looking at Rick Steves' Europe there at the start of it. And, you know, I love Rick's shows. I never miss them. And the thing about Rick is that he makes the destination the star. And I got to meet Rick there after season one. And when I met him, I realized the reason for the success of his shows is that it's his humility and his kindness and his realizing that the destination is the star of his shows. And I took inspiration from that. And certainly Ireland does not disappoint.
That's a great way of putting that, making the destination the star of the show. That's just a wonderful perspective with which to...
Ireland is what it says on the tin. You know, Ireland is everything you want it to be. It can never be a disappointment, you know. But the key is to go to Ireland, not just to see the country, but to experience the people and what they bring to the table.
I'm David Fleming. On this edition of the program, I'm speaking with Michael Londra. Now, Michael, we'll talk about your upcoming appearance at the Redlands Bowl in just a bit, but first, more on Ireland with Michael. As you've been presenting this exploration of Ireland, I'd love to hear of some place which you already knew quite well, but still learned something new.
For sure. You know, what happens in such a small island is that even if you just leave my town, 3 miles outside of my town, people have a different accent, you know? So there are massive influences from the Vikings, from the Normans, from the British, from everybody who invaded us. You know, the Spanish Armada tried at one point. Mm-hmm. So wherever you go in the country, there's a unique influence. My mother's family is from Wexford. It's a very big, broad family. I know everybody, and I know everything that there is to know about Wexford. Very much a Viking town that became a Norman town. Our walls are still there, and I can tell you all of that history. Cromwell was very involved in my town,
okay.
Not in a good way. However, my father's family is from County Mayo, which is in the northwest, much more barren, not invaded by anybody, because frankly, nobody wanted to go there because it was so barren.
Mm.
It was stunningly beautiful, but there was no way you could sow any crops there. And in learning about Mayo, I learned about my father's family. My last name is a very strange name. There's only one family in Ireland with that name. And so we did some DNA research up there on the name and discovered that it's actually South American. And the connection was indeed the Spanish Armada. because they had invaded South America before they tried to invade Ireland. It didn't quite work out because of the wild Atlantic and the rocks, but also the wild savages of the time who lived up in the northwest of Ireland. But I discovered so much about County Mayo and the stories there. I fell in love with the place, even though I'd kind of grown up traveling there. I look at Ireland now with a different lens. And like everyone, we take our homes and our homeland for granted. But when you leave and you look back at it, particularly literally through a lens, you see the country in a different way. And the stories that I find are just endless and fascinating and engaging. And I see Ireland now very differently to 6 years ago when we started the show. Ireland, as a tourist destination, we know what we're doing. We've done it for a long time. However, the north of Ireland, because of the troubles up to 25 years ago, had zero tourism. Nobody went to the north of Ireland, including me. So over the past 20 years, since the signing of the peace accord, which has been very successful, Northern Ireland is becoming the place to visit now when you go to the island of Ireland. So we work very closely with Tourism Northern Ireland, a body which really is in its infancy, and they're learning about what they have, and what they have is insanely beautiful. The northern coast of Ireland is truly spectacular. People might have heard about the Giant's Causeway, but all across the Antrim coast, you've got Bushmills Distillery, Dunluce Castle, which looks like something from Game of Thrones. Indeed, many of the scenes from Game of Thrones was shot in Northern Ireland. There's a great Game of Thrones studio tour that you can do, which I was very excited about seeing. And then if you cross the coast, you end up in the city of Derry or Londonderry. And that town has just exploded with new cultural experiences. The TV show The Derry Girls obviously shot there, and people are very interested in trying to understand that accent. I have the same problem understanding it, by the way. And then you pass through the city of Derry and end up in probably my favorite county to visit, and that's County Donegal. You've got Slieveleague, the highest cliffs in Europe. I think way more spectacular than our famous Cliffs of Moher. You've got some incredible hotels up there and the most stunningly beautiful scenery. I just spent a gorgeous few days up there, and it really is like you leave the world behind. We've an episode coming up actually where we did actually leave the world behind. We went to an island off the coast of Ireland called Inishbofin. That truly is the most magical place I've been to on the whole island of Ireland. There's no police force out there. There's about 200 people who live on the island.
Ooh.
It's absolutely magical. One ferry goes out in the morning and comes home in the evening. There's a hotel out there, a really great hotel, where they have traditional music every night. And you have the best seafood that you'll ever taste anywhere in the world because it's right there and from the water.
Yeah,
I think it's going to be the next destination to go to in Northern Europe. It's called Inishbofin. I kind of don't want to tell people, but I feel I have to.
Yeah, well, it's a good tease to make sure that people keep watching so that they can catch this episode.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. Sometimes when you learn about a secret, you know, sometimes it feels bad sharing it, but I want everyone to see how great it is, you know?
Oh, get people to think you're going to show them Avalon and just spill the beans on that one. Okay.
Yeah.
We've got some upcoming episodes. How about some places that you want to explore? We just talked a bit about some here, but things that have been, you know, on the back burner, as it were, things that have always been there, but you just haven't gotten to it yet.
Yeah. So there's 32 counties on the island, 6 in the north and then 26 in the Republic. And there are counties that no tourists go to, like County Roscommon, County Offaly, County Laois. And next year, I want to explore a few of those. There's also, you know, people think when they think of County Kerry, they go to Killarney, and they might go to the Dingle Peninsula, which does not let you down. It's truly spectacular and in my top three destinations there. But there's other peninsulas down there that really very few people know about or go to. The Beara Peninsula and the Ivara Peninsula. We've touched on the Ivara Peninsula. Charlie Chaplin used to own a home down there. It's where Walt Disney used to take his family on vacations. But nobody else went down there. And even to this day, there are much less tourists that go to some of these lesser known peninsulas. So I think if any of your listeners are going to Ireland, that they check out of the way places, you know. It's more difficult to get to them, but I promise you it's much more worth it. You're not going to be in the same village with about 16 other busloads of Americans, you know.
Oh, that's good.
And you'll have a much more unique experience. I love County Cork as well. I think Cork is like the Texas of Ireland. It's the largest county, and everybody who lives there thinks that it should be its own republic. But it's worth it. They are arrogant about their county for a reason, because it has so many delights. I could do a whole season on County Cork. We're going to do a lot more next year on the south. County Cork, County Waterford, and finally, from the original season, we're coming back to my home county of County Wexford.
Let's go to your upcoming performance at the Redlands Bowl. Will this be entirely singing, or will there be some talk? There's going to be a little bit of Ireland with Michael and then some songs.
Yeah, nobody wants to hear me singing all night. I like to take people on a bit of a trip to Ireland. You know, I share stories about where I come from. I think particularly for people on the West Coast, Ireland is a world away. You know,
yeah.
And because of the TV show, we can take all of that incredible footage and put it up for people to see. And I can share the songs that I'm singing and the stories behind them visually with people so they can kind of understand what I'm singing about or where I'm singing about. Also, I've got 6 of the best Irish dancers in the world, all Riverdance alumni. I mean, of all of the gigs that I'm doing over the next year, the Redlands gig have the best dancers. They are the best in the world. So trust me, nobody's wanting to hear me sing all night on these to get a load of these dancers.
Okay. Now, songs that when you do perform, are there any that are just always in your lineup? Something that's so dear, you have to include
everybody it. Wants to hear me sing Danny Boy, right? It's a cliched song, but I do like to honor it. I love that people ask me to sing it everywhere. It'll probably always be in my sets. But there's a few other songs that I've written or traditional songs that I always kind of have in the mix. People have expectations of what our show is going to be, and I like to give them a piece of that. But then I like to kind of share what I think is new or good about Irish music.
Yes.
It's always good to kind of entertain people, but then occasionally educate people as well.
Oh, without a doubt. That's what I would hope for as well. Now, something that I was really thinking about, not song specific, but more notions around songs. I'd love to hear about a song which maybe you had sung for years and years, and then one day there was just some sort of deep, deep significance that you never saw before. Looking at, say, like The Water Is Wide, maybe you'd sung that for decades before realizing the song is about love, before you'd even experience love yourself, perhaps.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up with that song, and it's actually not an Irish song. Everybody thinks it's an Irish song, and people kind of get caught up in that. I recorded that before it was special to me, before I realized, A, maybe that my version of it people loved. Again, I don't take myself too seriously about my singing. But unfortunately then, for the longest time, I didn't realize the impact that my songs might have on people. So over the past 20 years, I've kind of grown to realize that my version of Water Is Wide connects to people emotionally. It takes them to a place. In 2013, I did a concert with Judy Collins back in Ireland.
Yes.
And it was Judy who kind of made me realize that I might sing well.
Gosh.
And made me look at that particular song differently. And I sang it with her. And it just kind of made me realize that people in the audience connect on a very emotional level to my songs. I thought of myself as an entertainer rather than as a person who moves people. And so, yeah, I think very differently about Water Is Wide now.
Yeah, well, it's your interpretation of it, it's so much more storytelling than singing. You're going beyond just hitting the notes. There's meaning behind each thought there. And wait, so I have to ask, so Judy Collins got you to see it from both sides now.
Oh, I see what you did.
Nice, right?
Yeah, she's pretty special. You know, we were doing a concert back in Ireland to honour the 50th anniversary of President Kennedy's trip to Ireland. She had sang at the inauguration, and I then was asked to sing at the president's graveside in Arlington that June in 2013. And then we flew to Ireland with a plane load of Kennedys and I had this concert back in Wexford. The Kennedy family are from Wexford. It was a thrill to get to perform with one of my heroes.
The connection for us with you here, after the Redlands Bowl, are you continuing a tour or are you back to film or some time off in Iowa for a bit?
A couple of things. We start editing the show, so September is my month to edit. I'm annoyingly controlling about the edit, so I'm in the studio for the whole thing. So that's September. We have tours to Ireland. You know, people come on Ireland with Michael Vacation. So I'm hosting some in Ireland, which I look forward to. I always like to show off where I come from. And then I'm hoping to be in rehearsals for Get Happy on Broadway at that point.
Oh, fantastic.
The next tour will be after Redlands, will be next March. In the McCallum. Oh, that's right, in Desert Springs.
Oh, so, gosh, one of your last tour stops, and then your next tour stops will be right here in our region.
That's exactly right.
Oh,
yeah,
that's totally
exactly
cool.
Right. I'm looking forward to the McCallum, actually. I have some great friends who live in the neighborhood.
Oh, fantastic. I really appreciate your time, and you, at least peripherally, have gone back in my world musically for several, you may or may not want to hear this, several decades.
Yeah, I've been around a while, I'm afraid.
I think you and I are within 1 year of each other. You're either 1 year
good.
Older or
you're
younger.
You're in your late 30s also then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, early 30s, yeah. That's it. Looking at my next knee replacement.
Yeah, actually, that reminds me, I'm going for a run this afternoon.
So. Ooh. Not me.
Luckily, my knees are doing okay for now.
Michael, again, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate this.
You're so welcome. I love chatting to you.
A ship there is, she sails the sea. She's loaded deep, as deep can be. But not so deep as the love I'm in.
On this edition of KVCR's, we've been hearing from Michael Londra, host of Ireland with Michael, seen on KVCR-TV Monday evenings at 6:30. A reminder also that Michael has a performance coming up August 8th at the Redlands Bowl. More at redlandsbowl.org, michaellondra.com, and on Facebook as well. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Michael Londra. And here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Sandy Hodela, Zach Mays, Champ Chipman, and Shireen Awad. Many past KVC Arts can be found through iTunes, NPR One, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. And most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support.